This episode is brought to you by Habit Aware. My Keen 2 brings awareness to my trichotillomania by giving my wrist a gentle hug or vibration when I'm doing the scanning behavior. Bring awareness into your life by visiting barbaralally.com/habitaware and use code LALLYLOVE for 10% off.
So I'm Stacey Nahill, and I am a skin picker in recovery. I had developed skin picking early in life. Throughout my adolescence, I remember doing some skin picking, but when I was in college, it became kind of a primary coping mechanism and a real painful emotional and physical experience for me for many, many years. And so I'm very relieved and pleased to be in a different place with it where it doesn't it's not my primary coping mechanism. I definitely still pick my face at times, but it does not cause me the kind of pain and shame as it did one time in my life.
When did you notice that this self-soothing, this coping mechanism was causing you issues? You know, when was it where it's like, hey, I noticed that other people are doing this, but I seem to be maybe taking it to another level?
I think I was aware. I was in college and I was in a fight with my boyfriend. And I remember just feeling really, really angry and like wanting to hit something and just didn't know what to do with all of that anger. And I went to the bathroom, and that was the first time I just kind of picked my whole face, like every possible pore. And then that was the first time I looked in the mirror after and was like, oh my God, like, what have I done? Yeah, so that was kind of the big memory I have of just recognizing that I knew what I was doing, but in that moment, it was better to hurt myself than to direct my anger toward him in any violent way. Or like, it was just there was too much anger and it had to come out somewhere.
When did you find out that there was a name for this behavior you were doing?
You know, actually, that's really funny. Not for a long time after that. I had actually been treating trichotillomania for at least a year before I ever heard about dermatillomania and realized that partly, because I'm a therapist, so partly I was drawn to working with trichotillomania. I didn't really know why. And then I realized about a year later, once skin picking started to be more in the conversation, that there was a huge connection and that was why I was so drawn toward working with that population. So it kind of came about around the same time that skin picking became more of a focus. So sometime in the 2000s, 2008, maybe something like that.
During your life with the disorder, did you ever share with anybody like, hey, I'm doing this, I can't control it, I can't stop it? Did you have a support system?
No, like I remember telling my mom. And so she would go with me. Like there was definitely a time when I was buying a lot of products to try to help my skin and going to dermatologists and that kind of thing. So she helped me in that direction, but never in terms of even understanding what was happening emotionally and that it was an emotional coping mechanism versus just like a dermatological or just skin focused experience.
And did you ever seek out professional help before you became their professional? But did you ever seek out maybe support from somebody else?
I did not. And actually, it's funny. I mean, I as a therapist, I've been in therapy for many years myself. And yeah, I would say I actually, as I started gaining my expertise as a professional and started writing about skin picking, I actually taught my therapist how to help me with it. And then also I'm in his therapy group, and I noticed immediately that there were a couple of other people who were like doing a lot of picking at their cuticles and So me bringing it in was actually the first time that others were talking about it in the group. And so in a really interesting way, like I've sort of taught him how to help me.
And what led you to wanting to become a therapist, especially dealing with people with BFRBs?
Yeah, so I think, therapists are always wounded healers for the most part. We're always drawn to trying to understand and figure out what happened to us and how to heal, I think is a big motivator. So I had an eating disorder in college as well. And so I really started with thinking that eating disorders was going to be my specialty, and I really wanted to understand what led to eating disorders and kind of excavate that for myself. And I did have a really good therapist at that time who helped me heal from the eating disorder, and then that was really what drove me to go on to graduate school and become a social worker. So yeah, I always knew there was something I was trying to figure out about myself. It just wasn't focused around skin picking. But I did also have a really helpful experience before I became a therapist. Right before grad school, I decided to become a yoga therapist. So I was an integrative yoga therapist. And that was the first time I started really getting in touch with sort of what was going on in my body and all of the different emotions that are stored in the body and how to release them. And I'm so glad that I found that before I even became a therapist, because I've always been a very somatically oriented therapist. And that's really been only in recent years that therapists have even begun to consider the body. So I was really lucky that I sort of knew that being in my body was one way to heal the emotional difficulties I had been through. And then that became definitely a big part of my work, both personally and professionally, around skin picking.
As a professional, what would be some of your best pieces of advice? I'm sure listeners are like dying to hear. They're like, okay, a professional that gets it. You know what I mean? It's like one of those things where we're so used to going to seek help and then having like you to educate the person you're asking for help. And so to hear someone who is in that space and also lives with the disorder, if you can, share some tips with us.
Sure. I mean, well, and I will say I have my own biases and my own perspective that comes from what I know about myself and what it took for me to heal. So the first thing I would always say is that this is not just a behavior. This is not something you can easily fix. This is not something that you can hate away, right? It has to be something where you start first with appreciating it, coping mechanism, understanding what it's helped to cope with, and that the hate I felt toward the behavior was part of what was really keeping me in that cycle. And so it's really counterintuitive for people, but I really start with the first thing we have to do is rather than try to get rid of the behavior, try to understand how it's been our friend. And once we can build in self-compassion, that's the only way we're even going to be able to let go of our reliance on it. So hating it isn't going to help. And it's also where I've never been interested personally in an approach that was really cognitive or behavioral at the base of it, because for me, I knew that this was really related. Obviously, I mentioned it was related to anger, and it was related to a lot of trauma that I experienced early in life. And I've always found psychodynamic therapy to be a place where I could have an integrated experience of how my behaviors were related to things I'd been through. So I also tell people, like, this is something that we can follow, like sort of like breadcrumbs to find all those wounds in your life, and we can use it as a guide to help us with your healing process. And that's really not the way most people come into treatment at all. They come in, like I said, hating it and wanting me to get rid of it. And so the first thing that we have to do too is I have to say, you're going to be mad at me because I'm not going to be even encouraging you to get rid of it. I'm going to be encouraging you to really get to know it. And once we get to know it and what it's doing for you, that's the only way I know to find other replacements, because it's not like a fiddle toy is going to be a replacement for something when it's really deep rooted and we have to work through the trauma that, or whatever it may be. It's not always trauma, but like difficulty with emotional expression. So we have to get you expressing yourself more. And then your urges won't be so high, and then you have more of a chance of letting go of it or bringing in other coping mechanisms, versus if we try right away just to get rid of it, it's going to cling, and we're going to get in a tug of war with it, versus if we can accept it, see that it's helped us with something, then we can start really getting somewhere. So I always tell people it's going to be much slower than you want it to be, and we may not even be doing what you thought we were going to be doing, because we're not going to be trying to get rid of it.
I 100% feel the same way you do about it. And it's almost funny that I'll receive comments like, how did you stop? How did you stop? I'm thinking, who are you asking? Because I still do it. Like, I still am actively, like, not as often and not as severely as I used to. But yeah, I'm looking around, like, I still do it very much so.
Yeah, and it's also probably, I would imagine, Barbara, for me, I mean, it's the relationship you have with the behavior. If you don't hate yourself for it, then it's okay if you do it sometimes, and it doesn't go into that, like, I hate myself, and so now I have to pick more, kind of a cycle.
Oh yeah, like I remember, I have very vivid memories of just like crying in front of the mirror and being like, why do you still do this? I can't believe it. And I think, many people can relate to this idea of like, yeah, we can try to shame ourselves out of it. And if that worked, I'm sure everybody would have this horrible negative self-talk. But
Yes.
like, it doesn't do it. It makes it worse. It doesn't help at all.
Yes, exactly.
What are some things that you have said to yourself, maybe after a picking episode?
You mean on my nicer days, like now that I'm being nicer, or when I was being mean?
Let's do both. Let's see how, growth.
Oh, okay, sure. So, I mean, I used to say to my, I mean, I used to sort of, I'm trying to put myself back into that moment, because I used to just be overwhelmed with despair, I would say. Like, oh my God, like this is my life. What's wrong with me? I'm like, I have no control. I said I wasn't going to do this, and here I am. Like, this is just, like, I'm not going to go out. I can't go out. I look too ugly now, all those things. And now, when I do engage in picking, it's usually not in a way that's really destructive. And so, like, I can either just say, like, okay, I did a little picking, but looking at what it used to be like, now I can kind of just do a little bit and stop. It doesn't have to take over my whole face. And then I can also ask myself, like, what does my body need? And what do I need emotionally? And what might have triggered this? So then I can keep moving into compassion around understanding what's stressing me out. And I like to even give names sometimes. If I have a spot that I'm working at that I can't let go of, I'll give it a name. And so, like, I had like a pandemic spot, and I just named it my pandemic spot. And it really helped me in terms of, like, oh, that's because the pandemic was really stressful, and even though I hadn't been picking before, of course I have a spot now, because yeah, that was just helping me cope with all these stressors that are new. And so, kind of naming it, and that's something I encourage my clients to do too. Name that spot, and then you'll get a sense of who or what is really kind of upsetting my homeostasis, and what do I need to do about that.
So for me, I have trichotillomania, and I noticed that sometimes, and you're a professional, I'm sure you've heard this before and even spoke about it, but the two different ways that I find myself pulling and engaging in this behavior, either it's automatic or focused or something like that. So with you, do you notice that you go between the two? I know that you mentioned earlier that anger is something that would maybe trigger it for you. Do you ever notice that, like, just maybe feeling with your fingers as well could also trigger you?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I do think that, like, finding a good dermatologist and being able to address some of the actual kind of breakouts that I was having was one thing that would help, because just having something when your hand scans is a trigger for sure. Whereas if you have a smoother face, it's just easier to leave it alone. But I would say, actually, in my experience, and then sort of how I've conceptualized it as a therapist as well, is that for me, that automatic picking that would lead to like long periods of time that I wasn't even aware of, and then I'd kind of come out of it and see the damage. That was really a thing of the past for me. Like for me, that was related to escape and PTSD symptoms and trauma. And so I can honestly say that now that I've really worked through most of my childhood trauma, that kind of picking doesn't really plague me anymore. And so now the focus picking is definitely more in my control, and that's part of why I don't kind of ever get out of control with it. Like it's just not so big. I'm not working on something so big that is so uncomfortable inside me that I just need to pick my face to find some peace. So that's a kind of a nice thing to reflect on, is that really, like, somehow I've really cleared out a lot of that underlying muck, and my hands aren't as restless anymore. So that's good.
So I know many people in the BFRB community, whether it's dermatillomania or trichotillomania, they have to change daily things that maybe people without the disorder don't have to worry about, right? So like a windy day for me, for example. If it's windy, I know I have to have my hair a certain way. Have you had to adapt in certain ways, or how have you adapted in certain ways to accommodate for your BFRB?
Well, actually, I think maybe like wearing makeup has been really helpful, because I didn't wear makeup throughout most of my life, and I'm definitely more likely to pick at something if there's something that I can see kind of calling my name. And so actually wearing makeup every day helps me not focus in on what those little imperfections might be. And yeah, that sounds like kind of an interesting, I think of a lot of people do makeup as camouflage, and that can be kind of like time consuming and negative. But for me, it's more like it just helps me kind of keep my hands off my face. And so that definitely has been helpful. And I think there are other like positive grooming things that I think come in, like I do have a good skincare routine, and I do get facials when I kind of, if I'm at a point where I really need a reset, I'll get a facial. But I also like get my nails done, and then like enjoy different sensory pleasures, like feeling my nails or looking at my nails, or different things that stimulate my senses that are not picking. I think that has been kind of a helpful shift as well.
Did you know Habit Aware also offers virtual peer coaching? This one-to-one peer-based program will coach you through shifting mindset, practicing healthy strategies, and creating your personal roadmap to recovery. To work with me, Ellen, or Anila, head over to habitaware.com/coaching today. Yeah, and it seems like, it makes it a wonderful and positive experience versus, like you said before, that camouflage, that, ugh, I gotta fix this. It's like, no, I'm actually just pampering myself, and it does help other things too.
Yes. And I don't think I ever used to touch myself nicely. And so now, like, even just sometimes I'll just notice that, we're always touching our bodies in some way for comfort. And I'll just notice that my touch is so much softer than it used to be, that I'll like even rub my hand on my chest when I'm sad. And that's not something I ever used to do, but just like giving myself a little bit of comfort physically, versus kind of turning to this harder comfort that used to be the only way to regulate. Because I mean, that's the thing about skin picking and hair pulling, right? It works. It does regulate your emotions and your state. It can shift you into a better state, or kind of help you let go of something. But there are also softer ways to do that, and I think I lean on those more than I ever used to.
As well as being a mental health professional, you are also an author. Can you tell us about your book?
Yes, well, so this is the craziest thing, is that like I engaged in a lot more skin picking until I wrote about it. And partly writing about it helped me let go of it, which is so cool. And I encourage people to do that, like to write about their experience, because I think I also just came to understand so much more about my personal relationship with skin picking. So I started writing the book in 2009 when I had gone to a retreat. I had done a presentation at the retreat, but I also went to a cognitive and behavioral 3-day kind of workshop. And I was so frustrated because, again, like it was sort of like a worksheet. I remember there was this one question of like, okay, so what are your stressors? And one of my stressors was like, I don't have any friends. And then it was like, well, how can you fix that? And what are the steps? And I was like, wait, there's so much in between me and fixing that. Like, there's some way that I push people away in my life. Like, it's not just that I am not joining a club. Like, there's something happening where I don't know how to make healthy connections and find a healthy community. And so a worksheet isn't going to help me with that. And I was so frustrated with that and a couple other things. Like, I remember the trainer did say that time, like, that it was a myth that anger turned inwards causes this. And I was like, what? Like, that is the one thing I know causes it. And so, like, I was so frustrated with just this idea that this would be some simple thing to fix when I knew it was very deep for me. And then I started writing the book because I couldn't find a book that talked about it from a depth perspective. And so then in my introduction of my book, I present kind of an essay that I wrote for a paper I was writing about women and aggression for in-group therapy. And just being able to connect in the skin picking and the aggression and how I had taken it all out of myself, but how, like, learning how to express myself and set my boundaries and be assertive was really the antidote for me. That whole process helped me stop picking. And then, once I finished the book, like, really my picking had, that was really when it made a huge shift into really not getting in the way of my life. So something about, like, untangling my own puzzle really, so that was a cool experience for me. And then I've just been really, like, happy that I think other people, like, I've gotten a lot of feedback that other people say, like, oh my God, this is the book that I've been looking for. Or, like, there had to be something more. I want to go to the roots. I knew my root, the roots of this were deep and needed deep healing. And so I've been really, like, it's been really gratifying that this thing that worked for me has also opened up a whole new realm of healing for other people, and then other practitioners who maybe tried the cognitive behavioral approach and found that it was lacking something. And I will say, like, cognitive and behavioral techniques are so important as a part of the process, but not as the process itself.
Do you have a memory of something that someone said to you, whether it was in a session? I know, privacy things, we won't share any of that, but something that really stood out to you that made you think, like, I am doing exactly what I'm meant to be doing right now.
I do have some clients who have given me permission to use their case studies with pseudonyms, and so I am able to talk about some of those cases. And there is a case that I feel very fortunate. I connected with some psychodermatology students, and they helped me write up one of my cases. And it's on skin research and technology, and it's open source, so anyone can read it. And this case was just so beautiful. This woman came to me with her fingers in kind of shreds and very angry, very bloody and wounded. And within 8 months, we had really turned all of that around. And that was very gratifying. And because it was a psychodermatology paper, we actually had to take pictures. And she agreed to have pictures taken of her hands. And she had taken a picture before she started treatment. And just looking at that picture and then this picture of her hand after treatment, one of the things she had done was engage in nail art. So she was actually able to paint both hands, which most of us can't do, but she made her own nail art. And that was really her replacement strategy. But we also processed the death of her father and then the earlier divorce and all of those sort of underlying issues. And between doing that and the nail art, she was able to let go of this behavior that she had lived with her whole life. And so every time I talk about that case or every time I see those pictures, it's super gratifying of just like, wow, like this is now a woman who loves her hands and is proud of them. And again, like it's exciting for me because she brought a lot of that to the picture. I think one of the problems with cognitive behavioral therapy is it's sort of like the therapist is giving the assignments, whereas I find that most of my clients sort of know what might help them in a way that I would never have thought of. So I would never would have thought of encouraging her to do nail art. And yet that's what she was able to do to replace her picking behavior and have a different relationship with her hands. So that kind of success story is rare, that it's that clear and clean, kind of really a really easy way to look and say, like, wow, like our work really changed her life.
That's so amazing. And I think too, the fact that, like you mentioned earlier, we never really touch ourselves in a positive way. Like it's always
Right.
doing this behavior, but now she is touching her hands probably much more, and it's in a
Yes.
beautiful way, and it's really nice that she can be proud of that as well as you are.
And I guess I'll just, and just the clearing out of the emotional piece is the part you can't see, but that piece is just as relieving too, that now she's made some peace with these deaths that she was sort of, this death of her father and then the divorce and both of those sets of grief she hadn't been able to process, and now was able to process and grieve in a way that was healthy for her. And that also was part of the background to these to this change in behavior.
And now also something that I've seen, let me ask you this. Does the name White Lightning mean anything to
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about that, will you?
So that was kind of the way that was a huge part of my journey was, I mean, I didn't even realize how much rage I had inside of me until I found a boxing gym. And then I realized how much I wanted to hit things. And, for whatever reason, also, I didn't mind getting hit. And so having an alter ego of White Lightning, which was my ring name when I was an amateur boxer, it really provided an avenue into a different part of myself, a really empowered part of myself. And empowered was definitely not how I felt before that. And growing up, that was not my experience. So also just like getting to feel like, like here are my hands that, have been used to hurt my face so much, but now they're doing something that's like a very different kind of use of my aggression. And now I'm a badass. So yeah, all of that was really life-changing and transformative for me, for sure.
What advice would you give someone, maybe a listener, who wants to start sharing their story, but they're maybe a little nervous?
I mean, I would say the most important thing is to pick someone to tell first who really you have a good chance of getting a good reaction. So I think we all kind of know who that person might be in our lives, and somebody who's really accepting and non-judgmental. And I think, the first person you tell is kind of important, because I do know a lot of clients who maybe have told someone and the person was just like, well, stop doing that, or what's wrong with you, or and then that shuts you down for a while. So I mean, I would say also like finding support groups or finding other people who struggle with this, or talking to you, finding someone that really is going to, have a perspective that's helpful and non-shaming is a good way to start. And it is so true that like shame grows in the dark. And so once you can find someone to talk to who doesn't sort of reinforce that shame, it can be so freeing. And I think the most important thing is that we have to come to understand that this is not something gross about us. This is something that other people can also give us comfort around, because it's a sign that we're in pain. And that deserves compassion.
Would you mind plugging everything about you? Like, if people wanted to get in contact with you, how can we purchase your book? Things like that.
Sure. So I have a website, stacynakehill.com, and you can find everything about me, including contact me on that page. I have a blog. You can find my book there. But my book is called Treatment for Body-Focused Repetitive Behaviors, an Integrative Psychodynamic Approach. And you can find it on Amazon or on Rutledge Press. And I am on Instagram, StacyNakel_LCSW. And yeah, and I am on a number of podcasts. I'm on a podcast called Therapist Uncensored. And that one, a lot of people have found me through. So that's a good one to listen to. I'm sure your listeners are into podcasts. So those are the main ways to find me. And I'm not taking individual clients at this time, but I do offer a lot of trainings for therapists all over the country. And also, I run an ongoing training group that is virtual. And so, yeah, now my mission is training other people to provide this depth-oriented approach to their clients.